book was that there is a disconnect between God's desire that we share what we have with those who have nothing, and the behavior of those who have wealth but do not share it with the poor, yet still claim to be followers of Jesus. But I don't like to should on people. You know what I mean? It could be that most of us could do something more, give a little more than we do to those who are in need. That's probably true, but is it also true that we're not going to convince anybody to give more by shaming them into it? I don't think that works either. And to be honest, most of us have some kind of anxiety about money. How will I ever pay off all these school loans? Will I ever be able to pay the mortgage now that I've been demoted to a lesser paying job? All comes down to the question, will there be enough? My friend from Kenya, when he visited, laughed when he heard about these problems. He said, these are first world problems. But imagine if all you had to live on was a few dollars from Social Security. Imagine what it would be like if you had to decide between buying your groceries or paying for your prescriptions. I've worked in several different soup kitchens in various places, and I found out that the stereotypes about the people who come to soup kitchens are all wrong. I thought, well, they're going to be homeless men who stagger into the place to get something to eat. It's not true at all. Many of the people who come to the soup kitchen are elderly. Many of them are already working. They're just not making enough at minimum wage to buy groceries and pay rent. Many of them are children. Those are the ones that Jesus was referring to when he told us to take care of the least of these, our sisters and brothers. When I read a parable, I try to find out where I fit into the story. Try to identify with one of the characters. Well, the problem with this parable is I can't identify with either of the main characters. I will never be as rich as the man in purple robes. Nor am I as pitiful as Lazarus. I don't really know that anybody here can really relate to either of those two extremes. So how do I determine who am I in this story? You know who I think I am? I think I'm one of the five brothers who are now doing pretty well since they inherited money from their rich dead brother. I think I'm one of the ones who needs to be warned that there is a great danger in what we have blinding us to those who have not. The rich man wanted Father Abraham to send Lazarus to him with some water. See, he still doesn't even see Lazarus as a person, just as a utility for himself. You ever been in a restaurant and think about the busboy, what kind of life he has, or the waitress and how she's managing to take care of her family? Have you ever looked at them and thought about them as people with real life needs and hurts? Have you ever gone to the counter at McDonald's and wondered how that person serving you is able to survive on what he makes? See, that's when we hear about the great chasm between heaven and hell. It doesn't seem to be a physical chasm. They can see each other. They can hear each other. Rather, it seems to be a gap of love that separates them. And that doesn't seem to change from this life to the next life. If you're that unloving, if you're that selfish, if you refuse to see the suffering of others in this life, then that will define you in the next life as well. So Mr. Moneybags tells Abraham, well, at least send Lazarus back from the dead so he can warn my brothers. I know they're doing really well with my inheritance now, but I don't want them to end up like I have ended up. And Abraham says, no, they have the Bible. They can read the Bible and find out about the reversal of fortunes there. Lazarus continues. He says, no, they probably won't listen. If someone comes back from the dead, then they'll listen. Now, that's a reasonable assumption, think Ebenezer Scrooge, but it was a false assumption, because Jesus came back from the dead and proved that it was a false assumption, because like many of those blind brothers, we will not see. Here's where I can relate to the story. Someone has come back from the dead to heal my blindness, my inability to see the poor, and to show me my responsibility for what to do and how I can help. Now the question is, do I believe it? But who is this Christ of whom I speak? Well, I'll tell you who he is. His name is Lazarus. He's a homeless man that lives under the bridge. He's a child whose mother is addicted to drugs. He's the elderly man who sits alone day after day with no human contact. He's the widow who grieves alone. He's the refugee who tries to survive one more day and find some way to feed her children while politicians argue over quotas. He's a woman in Honduras who has to watch her child die of an intestinal parasite that would be easily cured with medicine, but it's not available to her, and she watches him die. It's the woman in North Carolina who's living in a shelter because floods have taken away everything that she had. It's anyone who is ignored by those of us who have the means to help, but have become blind to the needs of our brothers and sisters. Those of us who have forgotten that everything that we have is a gift from God and a tool to be used to alleviate suffering. If you want to see Jesus, take a look at these children of God, the least of these, the ones named Lazarus. There's a sign on the door of a cathedral that reads, "The Gate of Heaven." And just underneath that is a cardboard sign that says, "Please use other entrance." Well, there is only one entrance to heaven, and that is by the grace of God. And the way we live is an indication of whether or not we are truly grateful that that grace has been bestowed on us, that we have been richly blessed. I learned a lot of things in seminary. Most of them I've forgotten. But one thing I will never forget was a statement by my favorite professor, the late Robert Kelly. He said, "Love people and use things, and don't get the two mixed up." That's a pretty good summary of the Christian life. This story, this parable that Jesus tells, is a hard lesson, especially difficult for those who want to make the transition from just being Christians to really taking seriously what it means to follow Jesus Christ. I've known some people who have done it. They've shown me the way. They've opened my eyes to the fact that when you see suffering, you have a responsibility to respond. One young man from New Jersey was a Wall Street whiz. By the age of 28, he was incredibly wealthy. One day he woke up and realized that life had to have some more meaning than just accumulating wealth. So he took everything that he had and started a self-development of people program in Guatemala. He saw the suffering of some of the poorest people on this planet, and he knew that he could make a difference, and he is making a significant difference in lives there. But you don't have to be super wealthy to do this, and you don't have to serve in faraway places. I know a woman who can't walk past someone begging on the street without offering to buy them food or give them money. I saw her once give all the money that she had on her to a woman and her child begging on the streets of Chicago. She saw the woman. Her name was Lazarus. I know. There are no guarantees that if you give money to a beggar, that they won't just misuse it, drink it, or whatever. But did you also know that Jesus had no guarantee that anyone would accept the sacrifice that he was making on our behalf, that anyone would pay attention to the fact that he did come back from the life, from death into new life to open our eyes? If you can't see across the chasm in this life, how will you in the next? Luke spends a lot of time about writing about the need for our checkbook to reflect the fact that we are followers of Jesus. Do you love this church? I know you do. And the time is coming soon when you will be challenged to answer that question financially. You have decided boldly and faithfully, and I think correctly, to call a full-time pastor. And I think you're probably aware of the fact that that will be a stretch financially for our congregation. But it will also come as an opportunity for you to show how much you love the ministry and mission that's going on here. It will be an opportunity for you to say how grateful you are for the gracious blessings that God has poured out on us. Do you see the suffering in the world and want to help? I know you do. Just remember to love people and use things. I don't think I'm going to ask very many questions when I get to heaven about Jonah or anybody else, but I'm paying more and more attention to this question right now. If I were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict me? Let us now stand and affirm our faith by saying together the Apostles' Creed.